Even Colin Powell is now saying we need regime change in Iraq. Let's go kill a bunch of people there. Powell, by the way, if I'm not mistaken, way back, that the young officer helped cover up the My Lai massacre in Vietnam. He's the voice of reason in the service of ancient idiots known as the Bush administration. Powell is the one who personally threatened the new leader of East Timor as soon as that country became independent, saying, if you support an international world court that's designed to bring butchers like Milosevic and the people in Rwanda and others to justice, but Bush doesn't want there to be an international criminal court because they might come after
his father,
or his father, or Kissinger, or whoever. But, you know, the international criminal court should apply to everybody but us. So said with the tip of a cowboy hat. But Powell told the president of East Timor, you go along with the International Criminal Court like all these other countries, except us, already have, not one penny of foreign aid for you. So, I don't have a whole lot of respect or admiration or trust for Colin Powell either. I'm sorry. And as lonely as it feels right now, to be in opposition to the war on terrorism and trying to spread the word on that, well, it's kind of like being one of the lonely voices in the wilderness after the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution saying, wait a minute, we shouldn't be sending all these troops into Vietnam. That war is wrong, and bad things are going to happen to both the Vietnamese and to us. And those people were shouted down as traitors, communists, freaks, pinkos, faggots. And this was soon enough after the Cuban Missile Crisis that there was a lot of fear of what the communists might try and do to us next. But against those odds and against having the federal government, military-industrial complex, and both the hierarchies of the Democrat and Republican parties aiming at the American people with both barrels, the American people did stop the Vietnam War. Stopped the Gulf War a hell of a lot quicker, didn't we? The reason King George I stopped all the troops at the border between Kuwait and Iraq when General Schwarzkopf was chomping at the bit to do a General Sherman job all through Iraq and destroy Basra, Baghdad, hope he fries up, a little Saddam Hussein on the Barbie once he gets home or whatever. Why did Bush let it go through? The protesters, who was getting so fierce and so widespread so quick they couldn't do it anymore. It wasn't the majority of the country, but just enough that it had the impact needed to accomplish the job. There aren't that many people rampantly sharing files, but already the majors are dropping their prices down, 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 because they're scared of the shock troops of the fair use movement. You know, it doesn't take a 50% majority of 130 million Americans to stop the war on terrorism and the planned invasion of Iraq. It takes people getting in everybody's face enough that it gets on TV, it gets all over the net, and even somebody as clueless as Bush realizes there might be a problem here. Anybody else see that little aside in the New York Times editorial saying, oh yeah, we're going to double the size of the CIA in the next 5 years? They've done such a great job so far. Let's have twice as much of them. Then they too can see, you know, to help Ashcroft determine if anybody is having sex without his permission. I mean, Ashcroft is so much like the Taliban in the Christian version of it. You know, he even put a blue velvet curtain around the Lady Liberty statue in the Justice Department because there was one bare metal breast. Hardly anybody knows this, but that's how obsessed he is. PBS, in a very pro-Ashcroft anti-porn documentary, said that he was planning a huge blitz against the adult video industry and even softcore porno mags because they were on Christian and all that other stuff. And, the September 11th delayed all that, but he's getting ready to go again. So maybe the way, I mean, there is humor in the ugly situation of the war on terrorism. And one of them would be if Ashcroft got so carried away that we all retaliated with a million nude march on Washington. Because we love our country and we're being patriotic, sir. As far as I'm concerned, the most patriotic thing we can be doing right now is spreading the word that the war on terrorism needs the plug pulled now. Something good. I'm sure there's been a lot of discussion here on the USA Patriot Act, and hardly anybody in Congress bothered to read, and they didn't want to look unpatriotic, so they said, okay, well, we're so patriotic, fuck the Constitution, now J. Edgar Hoover's ghost can come, the new FBI can come read your files and check your computer anytime they want, and if you tell anybody they've been to your home or business, you can go to jail for that, too. That's another reason I don't think us helping the FBI is quite the best solution to this problem. It's beginning to look a lot like 1984 and the end of war. Oh, we actually put these down here so I don't spill them on my handwritten notes. No printouts for me. I have the same relationship with computers as I did the last time. Not for any Luddite reason, then I signed a deal with them. I mean, aside from all the porn, I could get anything I want to hear the answer from their other ways anyway. I will eventually, but, I find this easier to read than a computer printout where everything's in a straight line, too. Lyrics to songs, I can't figure out what word I want to put where, I put them smaller and smaller, put them in different colors, whatever. You can't do that if you write on a computer. It's just my ass-backwards, inefficient way of working, but I hope the results speak for themselves. Endless war. Let's send advisors to Colombia, just like we did to start the Vietnam War. And in case of these protesting, why don't we do just like Kissinger and the rest and overthrow the democratically elected leader of Venezuela, which we're getting ready to try again, apparently, judging from the last USA Today I saw. You know, Cowboy Bush, you don't want to help the government get more access to technology to do these things. And of course, it's Bush's phrase that the access is evil. You know, Bush, Rumsfeld, Cheney, Ashcroft, etc. He didn't clear that phrase with the State Department or anything. He just put it in there, the State of the Union address. It's just like Reagan, you know, we turn that guy loose without his cue card. Bad things. Or these weird things can happen. You know, like, I'm a human being and fish can coexist peacefully. We have to have a wholesale effort against racial profiling, which is illiterate children. Bush said that during the second televised debate. And did corporate print media review it the next day, call him on it?
No.
You know, the whole thing of the debate was, well, Gore appeared more informed on the issue, but Bush appeared more likable. Appeared more likable. Therefore, he won. That's what they were saying. Of course, the debates were basically Bush and Gore patting each other on the head over who loved executions and taking money from poor people more. If they hadn't changed the rules around at the last minute to make sure Ralph Nader couldn't debate. How many of you know that not only was Nader locked out of the three televised debates where he wouldn't have let comments like that from Bush go, but when he was given a ticket by somebody who got one at random by lottery to be in the audience of the first debate in Boston. Every other ticket holder let in, Nader stopped by the cops and threatened with arrest.
Whoa.
This is what democracy really looks like. So then, Fox News gives him a press pass, Fox of all people. And all the Fox reporters and the crew get in with their passes. Ralph Nader, surrounded by cops, and threatened with arrest. If I were in his shoes, I would have let them arrest me right then and there, and that would have gotten out of control. But because it didn't, that's where us as media activists is so important to get the word out about these things. And I went over to Europe for a tour 5 days after September 11th. I had to get over my fear of flying quick. And I was amazed at the contrast between the quality and the depth of even the straight and even conservative media coverage of September 11th and its origins, its roots, and its ramifications in the European media versus the American media. I've joked that our media has gotten so dumbed down at the corporate level that it's like Pravda. You know, the old Soviet Union newspaper, we'd have 8 pages a day of all the government thought you should know. We're there.
Yeah.
We're there. I came back to this country thinking everybody else knew the stuff that I did as to what was going on over there. One of the best sources in the English language was a British daily paper. Yes, a daily paper called The Guardian. You can read their stuff on their site, guardian.co.uk, if you want any real coverage of the war on terrorism. Don't go to the New York Times, let alone the Wall Street Journal, which actually the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal in disguise these days, as far as I'm concerned. Go overseas where you get a more objective point of view. Check out The Guardian or whatever. They report over here that The Guardian did 2 stories on this. There was an informal diplomatic meeting in a Berlin hotel room last July attended by America, Russia, Iran, Pakistan, Northern Alliance, Taliban invited, declined to attend. And according to The Guardian, the American diplomat came right up and said, "We're getting ready to invade Afghanistan and take out Osama bin Laden." And he didn't seem to care that the Pakistani representative took that news back to the Taliban government, who were originally our friend, in Afghanistan, which The Guardian reported he did. I thought that was very interesting. I also thought it was interesting that that last bin Laden video, we weren't even allowed to see on TV over here. Well, over here they said, oh, it's old footage, the guy's probably dead. Overseas, everybody's saying it's new and he's very much alive. What is the truth? Who knows? That's what worries me the most. Another thing not reported over here, the hype is, all the planes were grounded. No planes flew in America on September 12th. Wrong. One did. A chartered Saudi airliner picking up members of the bin Laden family in America to fly them safely home. Yeah. And how many of you know that the Bush family and the Bin Laden family have had a business relationship for almost 25 years? Do I need to go into that? I saw a lot of hands go up. What is that they say? Well, George W. Bush, one of his partners in his first business venture, Arbusto Energy, in 1979, was Salem Bin Laden, Osama's older brother by 1 year, who was later reportedly killed in either a car or a plane crash. I assume it listed as both. And King George I, unfortunately, didn't fade into the sunset and retire like Reagan, or spend all his time on a golf course being a golf bum like Gerald Ford or whatever. George Bush I went right back into the intelligence operatives and dirty tricks business and is now part of a company called the Carlyle Group, where he gets $800,000 in Carlyle stock for speaking appearance. The head of Carlyle is Frank Carlucci, who was one of the secretaries of defense in the Contragate era in the Reagan-Bush regime. And Carlyle is now the 11th largest defense contractor in the United States. They came out of nowhere thanks to some of these connections. And they don't even make anything. They just specialize in buying up floundering manufacturers of weapons of mass destruction. They buy them up, get them making money again, and then either sell them or keep making the money off of them before they move on to another host. Also working for Carlyle are James Baker, Bush's former Secretary of State, the first Bush, John Major, who replaced Thatcher as Conservative Prime Minister of Britain, Colin Powell was doing speaking engagements on behalf of Carlyle before he became Secretary of State, and according to Michael Moore, when George Bush I flies to Saudi Arabia to do business for Carlyle, he is put up in the Bin Laden family mansion. And according to not just Michael Moore, that at least what I've been able to find, one of the other investors in Carlyle up until October, when it got a little hot in there, was the Bin Laden family. On top of that, did anybody notice on the front page of the New York Times today a company called Brown and Root is privateering and making money off the war on terrorism? They're a private company that puts up the temporary military bases in Afghanistan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, wherever. They run the mess halls. They do the soldiers' laundry. These private employees wear military garb, too, that look like soldiers, carry guns, and they're making money off the war by doing this instead of the Army doing it themselves. Guess who owns Kellogg, Brown, and Root? Halliburton, the oil pipeline construction company that until recently was run by a guy by the name of Dick Cheney, who, when he was still head of Halliburton, were negotiating with the Taliban on whether or not to put an oil pipeline through Afghanistan, and had got another company to do a feasibility study of the project. That company's name is Enron. Just the kind of stuff that is not getting reported in the American media. Therefore, if you find stuff like this in reliable sources like the European media, send them out to other people. Get people to read this stuff before we get into the Middle East deeper and deeper and deeper and become more and more and more hated.
Protest!
Exactly, but there's other ways to protest besides hitting streets. And that's why I'm getting back to becoming the media. I'm down with street stuff and creative crime, too, believe me. But even if you don't want to do that, just telling people what's going on is important. Don't let the more radical crowd tell you that just because you don't have a black mask on, you're getting your head cracked and gassed by the cops doesn't mean you're helping out. Doing something is better than doing nothing. Every time. I want to read you this from The Guardian in Britain, September 29th, 2001. happened to run into this when I was over there. I thought it was very interesting. In 1979, after the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, and let me preface that, there's a you know who Zbigniew Brzezinski is, Jimmy Carter's old national security advisor? He recently did an interview that so far has only been published in a French magazine, bragging that we helped start the whole civil war and the downfall of Afghanistan. We didn't start arming and training Mujahideen after the Soviets invaded. We started recruiting Islamic zealots to go do our dirty work 6 months before the invasion, because we thought it would be a neat idea to draw the Soviets into an unwinnable war in a country we're now trying to win a war in. We thought it would be a real neat idea. Look what's happened to us now. Anyway, quote, in 1979, after the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, the CIA and Pakistan's ISI, Inter-Services Intelligence, launched the largest covert operation in the history of the CIA. Their purpose was to harness the energy of Afghan resistance to the Soviets and expand it into a holy war, an Islamic jihad, which would turn Muslim countries within the Soviet Union against the communist regime and eventually destabilize it. When it began, it was meant to be the Soviet Union's Vietnam. It turned out to be much more than that. Over the years, through the ISI, where was I? There I am. The CIA funded and recruited almost 100,000 radical Mujahideen from 40 Islamic countries as soldiers for America's proxy war. The rank and file of the Mujahideen were unaware that their jihad was actually being fought on behalf of Uncle Sam. The irony is that America was equally unaware it was financing a future war against itself. In 1989, after being bloodied by 10 years of relentless conflict, the Russians withdrew, leaving behind a civilization reduced to rubble. Civil war in Afghanistan raged on. The jihad spread to Chechnya, Kosovo, eventually to Kashmir, and of course many other places. The CIA continued to pour in money and military equipment, but the overheads had become immense, and more money was needed. The Mujahideen ordered farmers to plant opium, as a revolutionary tax. The ISI set up hundreds of heroin laboratories across Afghanistan. Within 2 years of the CIA's arrival, the Pakistan-Afghanistan borderland had become the biggest producer of heroin in the world and the single biggest source of the heroin on American streets. In other words, the ones on the streets of this town, among others, were killing my friends. The annual profits, said to be between $100 and $200 billion, were plowed back into training and arming militants, including a young hothead with a great big trust fund by the name of Osama bin Laden. This is the kind of stuff that needs to be spread to people who factually believe what they read in the New York Times and see on CNN. And again, I don't think we have a whole lot of time to lose. War on terrorism, one of the ways that might eventually turn this around is start addressing the root causes of terrorism. And on top of that, I find myself agreeing with Michael Medved, of all people, that right-wing punditoid, and he wrote in the USA Today, of all places, the American people must pursue prevention and protection, not punishment. Prevention and protection, not punishment. Some of the ways to do that would be, as much as humanly possible, not just ending our dependence on foreign oil, but as much as we can, trying to cut down and end our dependence on oil altogether. And people say, "Oh, you're never going to persuade people with that. Why do you even put out ideas like that?" I like to have people think of what is possible, because that's the first step to making it possible, right?
Yeah.
Why not be afraid of power or something like that? Why SUVs are a greater threat to national security than Osama bin Laden? Yeah. It's not just because it seems to bring out the flaming road rage asshole
everybody in the highest one between a half dozen that was nearly run me over in this town in the past few days, running traffic lights because they got their big bad navigator, therefore the law doesn't apply to them. It doesn't just increase our dependence not just on foreign oil, but thus increases our dependence on keeping everybody in that part of the world repressed so we can make off with our natural resources to power our swine mobiles back across the world. On top of that, what good would it be to fortify our whole country with a Great Wall of China against terrorism? If we put so many holes in the sky, we can't go outside anymore. If all the ways the Bush mob is cynically manipulating our fear and our upset over September 11th, nobody's more cynical than they are about it. The most cynical part of all is Star Wars. Well, I'm far more afraid of one of those things not just bankrupting us, just like the Soviet Union went bankrupt in an arms race, but what happens if one of those things malfunctions? Fires at a target and starts a war, or crashes back to Earth like the Soviet space station, Russian space station near Dale a while back. That could potentially have enough plutonium in there that if it blows, there'd be enough plutonium dust in our atmosphere, the most toxic substance in the world, to slowly kill off every breathing critter left on the planet, even snakehead fish. And I'm far more afraid of that than Osama bin Laden, Saddam Hussein, and big bad North Korea combined. Why not take all the money they're earmarking for Star Wars and put it into things like safer airports and safer planes?
Education!
Yeah, health care and education, too. Not just for us, but for all the other people who are so mad at us for making them poor, they're turning to terrorists! Turning the rest of the world into our little WTO-enforced slave plantation that's spawning the anger of the terrorism in the first place. So, I forgot where I was. Oh, yeah, more solutions, more solution bonus. Okay. More Star Wars money could be spent on something that little did I know until I got to Florida, that voters in the 2000 election passed this on a state ballot initiative, and now Governor Jeb Bush won't spend the money. High-speed train system. Costly, but we can afford Star Wars, and consider Star Wars and take the train. Go to Boston in an hour. Go to D.C. in an hour. Go to Miami in 3 or 4 hours. Go to L.A. or San Francisco in 5 or 6 hours or less. You know, maybe not quite as quick as it would take to go on a plane, but look at the payback. You're not burning everything up with jet fuel. You can't get hijacked and flown into a building and killed. And grab the seat and you get scenery, too. Something you buy from Newsflight magazine and awful Disney movies. And granted, it's going to go by at warp speed, but after all those hyper-driven MTV commercials and all, I'm sure you'll use the last one. And, Michael Moore put it, will we ever reach the point when we realize we will be more secure when the rest of the world isn't living in poverty so we can have nice running shoes? That met today was even with the first Afghan war, and well, not the first in that country, but the first of the ones that factor in here, to drive out the Soviet Union. Did we come in there and thank the Afghan people? Did we help rebuild their roads, their sewers, their cities, their buildings, their schools? No, we did nothing. Thanks for being cannon fodder and corpses in our little proxy war. See ya! That's what gave us the Taliban. We left all the guns in the hands of these Mujahideen people who turned into warlords and shot up the country even worse to the point where it made the Taliban look good. And now we're letting it happen again, and the warlords are killing each other again. The poppies are growing everywhere again. It doesn't have to be that way. Don't put money into Star Wars. Put it into rebuilding the places we fucked up in the first place. Nuclear catastrophe that only beginning to talk about now as if it falls into the wrong hands. we didn't really help the former Soviet Union after we quote unquote won our Cold War either. Now they have all these leftover weapons, even rumored to be nukes in Ukraine and Russia and Kazakhstan and all. Sooner or later, they're going to be starving bad enough. If they aren't already, they're going to sell that stuff to whoever will give them money to get them food.
Yeah.
Why don't we spend our big-ass military budget going into those places, buying up all those weapons with money or with food or whatever, and destroying them on sight before they fall into other people's hands? Before, after World War I, did we help the German people out when we got rid of their government? No. We just left them there, rubbed their noses in the misery of the ruins and squalor of their own country, the humiliation. Times got so bad that for a while in post-World War I Germany, it took a wheelbarrow full of money to buy a loaf of bread. By the time the 30s rolled around, people were so desperate, so bitter, so angry, they all but democratically elected Hitler to power. Meanwhile, back to World War II, we were a little smarter. There was the Marshall Plan to rebuild Germany and put Western Europe back together and get Japan back off the ground and integrate them into the world economy and provide all those lovely gizmos you have so much fun with in Japan today. Why no Marshall Plan for the former Soviet Union? We have abandoned those people to mob rule, and if we don't help them out at some point and keep fun and get the money and the aid to the right people instead of just the so-called oligarchs and the mob, they're going to want a strong man who's going to make the trains run on time and get rid of those pesky Jews and immigrants of a different color and go fuck with the United States and Western Europe. We're planting seeds again through our own negligence, and it just doesn't have to be that way. If Colin Powell and Sam Nunn were such great visionary people, they would be calling for this right now, for the way our foreign policy and security apparatus really needs to change. Okay, I'll have a girl here. Thank you, my servant.
You can sell it on eBay now.
Holy water, anyone. Oh, my old record collection. My punk rock 7-inches of the bands I used to knew back in the day made me who I am today. I love this stuff so much. It means so much to me. I'm going to sell it on eBay. Aaron Magruder was here earlier. How he gets away with getting that stuff in daily papers, I do not know. But sometimes humor can be the most powerful weapon because it gets through to people and you can get it into these places. Tom Tomorrow cartoons and other things. Was he hopeful? And that's a tough question for me, too, but I thought it was worth taking a stab at. I wouldn't say I'm optimistic, but I am hopeful because I do disagree with Aaron when he says there's no new protest movement today. I mean, I do agree with him that if Martin Luther King came out today, nobody would know his name. Not just because they forget to report it in the news, just like they forget to report Ralph Nader being locked out of the debates and the Bushes and Bin Laden's financial relationship. In all likelihood, if a Martin Luther King or Malcolm X came up today, the cops would blow his head off.
That's right.
But that doesn't mean there's not a strong new movement today. It's called, even in Europe, it's called the Spirit of Seattle. The anti-corporate movement, fighting corporate power. Everything from the logo movement, to the EFCs, to the sweatshops, to people refusing to pay major labels for crappy songs and just taking
money out of the
house and fuck them the rest of the time. That is part of a very important new movement. Again, it's still small, but they're already scared enough of it that the police presence is getting heavier and heavier and heavier. They've been trying to point fingers and saying that the Spirit of Seattle people helped cause the bombings on 9/11. Prime Minister Billy said that. Wall Street Journal said that. So why not have more of it at this point? Anyway, that is where I get my hope. When I see people, instead of blindly wearing clothes with great big corporate brand names on them and only wanting the cushy job and the SUV, they're starting to say, wait a minute, I want a life out of my life. I don't want to just be a spending machine or whatever. Some people getting smarter about what they eat, what they watch, what they listen to, how they get their information. The more we can help spread this, the better. Again, there's not that many of us, but it is making a difference. And we stop the Vietnam War, we can turn the tide against corporate dictatorship as well. Long term, over our lifetime. And we're not as alone as we might think we are on this. There was a rather conservative mainstream magazine began getting some interesting poll results and publishing them a few years ago. This conservative mainstream magazine says that over half the Americans they polled thought the protesters in Seattle had a point. Then it got more interesting. During the 2000 election, they came back with a survey saying that 72% of Americans say business has too much power. And a sense of invasiveness, corporations invading into the private parts of our lives, is growing. And the people feel overworked and underpaid, especially in contrast to the money the Enron-type CEO people run off with. You know, we have the biggest disparity between worker pay and executive pay of any country in the world now. And people increasingly feel threatened by the products and services of corporations themselves. And the huge corporate campaign contributions contribute to corruption and undermine democracy. And this very publication said, corporate America, ignore these trends at your peril. First, get out of politics.
Yeah.
And start spreading the wealth to more than the Kenny boys and all. And guess who this was? Guess who this was? Business Week. Cover story. Too much corporate power. And the answer is yes. Business Week answered yes. We are not alone, ladies and gentlemen. Ralph Nader had great fun with this on the campaign trail, too. Let's put Business Week to the left of the Democratic Party. And he's right. And even if you don't want to be on the front lines of the shock troops, well, there are other ways of fighting back against corporate power on a one-on-one basis that do make a difference. And it's also the easiest thing to turn on other people to do it to help fight corporate feudalism. Not capitalism anymore, feudalism. Starting with, should you choose to do so, maybe I said this last time, I think it's worth saying again. If you choose to do so, just make a vow to yourself, I'm not going to cooperate with corporate dictatorship anymore. They can't pass. Starting with, don't give them your money. As much as humanly possible, no more stuff from chain stores, no more chain restaurants. Buy as few products made by multinational corporations as possible. And it's not as hard to do as you think. Some of the reasons I boycotted McDonald's for 25 years without batting an eye possible. And I know how hard it is in this day and age to find a job, as Mark was talking earlier, that actually means anything to you. Meaningful work, but you can still pay the bills, so you don't wind up being 50 years old and still living in a rat hole with roommates you hate. That's hard. But as much as possible, try not to work for them either. Don't just not give the FBI your time, your energy, and your talent, your intelligence. Don't give it to Exxon. Don't give it to Microsoft. Don't give it to that crypto fascist, Larry Ellison, and what he has in mind. Don't give it to him. But if you must work for them, just remember that the digital age has ushered in a whole new frontier of sabotage on the job. Another important part of spreading this and these first easy steps is not to be a fundamentalist about it. You know, fundamentalist radicals annoy me as much as fundamentalist religious people do, for the same reason. See, everything is black and white, and notice they have the answer and not even known about it. I know so many people who start out, you know, when they first see the light, so to speak. You know, they're more punks than thou, more anarchists than thou, more radical than thou, more file sharing than thou, more anarchists than thou, more vegans than thou, more squats than thou. For 6 months, 2 years, then something happens. Something begins to set in where not only are they making other people miserable and turning them off to perfectly good ideas in the process, his Maximum Rock and Roll and others, but they also are making themselves miserable. But they see things as black and white, you know, no color, no middle ground, whatever kind of tool. If I don't do everything exactly this way, I'm going to be selling out, man. And I'm so sick of this, I'm going to sell out. See ya, bye. I'm going to go work in Silicon Valley, and I'm just going to have one SUV in a boxer. I'm going to have five. Fuck you all. Doesn't have to be that way. You know, maybe just take a little more time to identify a moral and ethical code and a lifestyle you can actually live with and live up to long term, you're more likely to have it stick with you instead of being some phase in your wayward youth before you become a Republican nutcase and go work in Washington or for a realtor or something. You know, and you go this far of the radical meter, instead of this far of the radical meter, it's less likely to turn into a mousetrap or a broken rubber band and go, boing! And there you are, the exact sort of SUV parasite you hated in the first place. You know, it doesn't have to be that way.
1980s!
What is that?
Hippies to yippies.
You got your history wrong there. I mean, that's a deep part of me because, I was really into the hippie thing as a kid in my teens, and I did feel betrayed by when people, the spirit that stopped the Vietnam War and watched the civil rights movement and the feminist movement and the environmental movement after the Vietnam War was over. Okay, our job is done. Let's go mellow out now and make money and listen to the Eagles all day. That was what made punk rock necessary. But freezing in one time period is not something I want to do. I mean, even if those baffles weren't suing me, I would not join their reunion tour because I think that's pissing on everything Dan Kennedy never stood for. Enjoying the past, learning from the past. You know, I like old records too, after all. It's fine. We'll get to that in a second. We're almost done here. But it's fine, but living in the past and freezing in the past is poison. And never in a million years did I think the people I'd have the hardest time getting that through to would be punk rockers. Enough said on that. Anyway, Other things for fighting back against corporate power, I do believe in voting and voting smart. Even if the national elections and the senatorial elections wind up being a joke, watch the local election show up. That's where, I mean, Giuliani got in because people like us in this town didn't show up to make sure he didn't get in. Ballot initiatives, those are really important to pay attention to. If it weren't for people like us showing up and voting, medical marijuana would never be passed. We have to be there to enact living wage laws, rent control laws, environmental rules with teeth that corporate legislators are too corrupt to enforce or enact anymore. You know, and the local government are the ones who decide how to spend all that money, our tax money that rains down on them from the federal and state government. In some smaller towns or suburbs, this can literally mean, should we build a homeless shelter or build a golf course? With a school board, it can mean, should we get some computers for poor kids, or should we make everybody salute the flag and pray to a Christian God in school every day? I mean, the easiest offices to win are the local ones because people don't show up. It doesn't just mean that fundamentalist Christian kooks like Ashcroft could get in if we don't watch it. It means people with good ideas could get in if we show up and support them. And that's how you build a more thinking, progressive movement that's actually inside the government from the ground up. The Christian coalition did it, so can we. And you got to show up and vote. And even if you do wind up become a really, really big dot-com tycoon someday, or a fast-track, money-track occupation, doctor, lawyer, contractor, dentist, website, genius designer, whatever, one way of giving back to the community is giving back to the community. You know, provide the service you make so much money from to people who can't afford it for free. The Dead Kennedys Frankenchrist obscenity case over the Frankenchrist album, which I fought with no help from the other band members, I might add, the attorney who represented me on that did it for no fee, just like the people who helped Mark and Negative Land. I wasn't so lucky with the Dead Kennedys lawsuit, but he said he did it because he wanted to give something back to his profession. Plus, he has a Porsche, he has a house, but he felt he should be given back to his profession. And he was sick of people like Tipper Gore and the Reagan administration picking on the Constitution. Yeah, Tipper, another reason Gore lost the election. And giving something back falls under the umbrella of not forgetting where you came from. I mean, most of the people here today are younger than I am. And by the time they're my age, I fear a majority of you will probably have become the exact sort of jerks you're not too fond of right now. But again, all you have to do to prevent this from happening is to not let it happen. I mean, don't become like the former members of my band or the people who not only fought against the Vietnam War but turned into Bill Clinton or people like that later on. Tony Blair was a right-on guy in his youth. Something happened to him. He let it happen. Or a better example, how many of you either know or know someone who has a parent who's like,
well, your mother and I, we had a great time when we were your age, smoking weed, fucking in the park, causing trouble in the street, but now that you're that age, just say no.
And, but make sure you take your Ritalin. The way to avoid becoming that kind of a monster parent is to avoid letting yourself become somebody like that. It's that simple. You know, remember years from now, what brought you here? What's important to you? What's part of your soul? Is it a part of your bank account? I mean, a lot of times the change happens in people when they either have kids and or buy property. And all of a sudden there's this change where there's something really precious that they have to go all out to protect from them. I must put all my money in stocks and bonds.
I must not let my child associate with those other people. So we will take the SUV, which we have because we don't want a little car to wreck our car and hurt our precious artifact child. We will take them to private school where we scam voucher money to enrich them. You know, owning a house doesn't necessarily mean you have to become conservative and paranoid and all that. Or same with having kids. I mean, there's better ways to raise kids than what we're generally told is the way to raise kids. One important thing being, you know, some of you may have kids, a lot more of you will, don't hide reality from your kids. Spread information because they're hungry for information because they want to find out what reality is because they said somebody isn't telling them the truth when they tell them what reality is. And another thing that I've noticed, I'm 44 now, believe it or not, is that a lot of, I noticed this when I, even before I was 30, that a lot of people my age had no tangible, visual, personal memory of Vietnam or even Watergate. And that stuff was everywhere at the time. Even in fourth grade, we all had a strong opinion on the Vietnam War. Watergate, we were in high school, it was the best soap opera all on all summer. Everybody talked about it, and Nixon was going down. But now,
hey, oh, I don't remember much of anything from back then. I guess I had a bad childhood or something.
If you start having a TV commercial they haven't heard in decades, bing, they recognize it. How scary is that? I don't remember my own childhood, but I watched the Brady Bunch. I listened to classic rock, and there's even less and less songs on that, thanks to Clear Channel, too. But the reason that didn't happen to me is because when the bloody footage of the soldiers who've been shot in Vietnam got on the evening news, the race riots, the Biafra War in Nigeria, where I got my name, my parents didn't change the channel. Like maybe the well-meaning Eisenhower parents were doing, thinking they didn't want to upset the kids. They let me see it, we talked about it, my sister was even younger, but we all knew what was going on. It was discussed, and I learned at an early age what racism is and why it's wrong, what war really is and why it's wrong. And this can also be used to teach media literacy, which is so important in an age of corporate censored media. You can do this to adults, is what I was saying. You shouldn't be able to graduate from high school unless you can pass a media literacy test, as far as I'm concerned. But they're not going to put that in the schools, at least not until I'm emperor, so we got to do it ourselves. And it was easy, again, when I was a kid in my household, it would just be my dad laughing at and making fun of the commercials, but also taking the time to say, son, see, that woman there, she isn't really that excited about her detergent. She's a paid actress who's trying to sell you detergent. Because detergent and soap really aren't all that exciting, are they? And so I applied that bullshit detector to other things. This is what I'm talking about with media literacy. Cultivate bullshit detectors in people. And I applied it to school, I applied it to my family, and then the state of siege really began. But I have no regrets about that. More and more, one of the best things you can do for kids is to empower them with a bullshit detector. So much so that when they become body conscious and teenagers and all, this is especially important for young girls. You know, if you get them to laugh at the fashion fascists and the fashion police long enough, by the time they're teenagers, they're not going to fall for this type of, if you ain't Britney, you ain't shit. And therefore, no matter who or what you are, you young girl must always hate your appearance and always be on a diet and always feel inadequate. If the kid's media literate, they're not going to believe the hype and say, ha ha, I'd rather be myself. Bye. So on that note, let's see.
The record.
Okay, one more thing before the record.
is one of the beauties of the spirit of Seattle and the anti-corporate movement is there's no magic leader telling everybody else what to do. We're networking, we're stitching ourselves together, we're doing it ourselves. No Mandela or Vaclav Havel or Sub Commandante ski mask on a white horse riding in to lead us to the promised land. We're doing it ourselves. We got to hang on to that, but it also means what would happen if corporate dictatorship had its train wreck right now. And all of a sudden, the people we're all so sick of running things badly weren't there anymore. Wouldn't we be ready to run things, take the bull by the horns, and make everything work? No, that's not the solution. What I'm trying to say is everybody for president, and this is how, is, well, let's look at this. There's been a lot of revolutions that's gone down since 1989, and some of them have been pretty damn ugly and haunt us to this day. The Balkan Peninsula, the former Yugoslavia, Afghanistan, Rwanda, Congo, Zimbabwe, you name it. But, well, I don't think it's been an American revolution since 1989. God, where did you go to school? California? Anyway, but there are some good examples, too. Far from perfect, but worth learning from. The former Czechoslovakia and South Africa. Both those revolutions, the dictatorships were brutal, violent, murderous. When they fell quickly, unexpectedly. Nobody would have predicted, even 3 or 4 days earlier, that the Berlin Wall was about to come down, and then all of a sudden it did. That was how fast this shit happened. But at least in those two countries, the hardcore frontline radical opposition not only knew what they didn't like and didn't want, they knew what they did want. And it put a lot of thought into that to the point of knowing who might have the specialist skills and the intelligence and whatnot to actually run different parts of the apparatus so the country didn't fall apart. Are we there yet?
I don't
think so. It's money. It has gone beyond the most part. This sucks. But the way to get beyond that as an individual, person up here yelled Jell-O for president, no. Everybody, start from time to time, this is not an egocentric thing to do. Start putting your head, start putting your imagination in the heads of these other people. Okay, what would I do if I was in Bush's shoes right now? What would I do if I was in the mayor of New York's shoes right now? What would I do if I was given a chance to reform the FBI? What would I do if I was in charge of the school curriculum, the town I live in? What would I do if I was in place with the boss I hate so much at work? How would I run the place differently and make it work? You know, this is an ongoing exercise you can do, put on the shelf, do some more when you feel like it's fun, I think. But anyway, at the very least, you're not going to have all magic answers right away. You can talk to other people or communicate with other people and find out what, you know, some ideas. But it'll have you asking questions, looking for ideas, trying to find solutions instead of just identifying what sucks. And it can't help but make you smarter. And if that train wreck of corporate rule happens, we are going to need each other, and we're going to need smart people. Because otherwise, it's going to be the ditto heads and the people with the stars and bars and the gun racks and the trucks running around playing king of the neighborhood, and we will get fooled again. So, for people who come up to me in the couple days I've been here and other places, they do, or I go and say, oh, you've inspired me so much, oh, you've changed my life. The ego likes that a little too much sometimes. But the point is, whether that really happened or not, now it's your turn. Thanks for listening, and now we'll leave. Members of my band and their little corporate army of goons, I am appealing that court verdict to a higher court. I appreciate the support, but it also is leaving me that many more figures past broke. And, you know, I want my little label, Alternative Tentacles, to survive. I want my stuff to be treated with respect, just like any other human being. People tell me, why don't you just forget about it and walk away? I can't. That's too much to me. But anyway, the appeal is expensive, so my announcement here is, this is my shoe. This is my shoe.
Stop that. I want to stop.
Anything put in this shoe goes to the Alternative Tentacle Legal Defense Fund to fund the appeal and help regain fair use of my own creation.